You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Sex trafficking has received growing attention in recent years, especially since Congress passed the Victims of Trafficking and Violence Protection Act of 2000. But 20-some years isn't necessarily a lot of time. There is limited research in knowing the prevalence from one community to the next, because trafficking is a crime that is hidden and can happen gradually over time. Sacramento County founded what it calls a first-of-its-kind study in California, and the numbers will give you pause. From 2015 to 2020, the study found in Sacramento County more than 13,000 victims of sex trafficking, a number that is likely an underestimate. The research also included interviewing more than 150 survivors with the goal of prevention and creating the right resources. I spoke with three guests who each played a key role. Dr. Shannon Williams is with the Institute for Social Research at Sacramento State. Terry Galvan is with the nonprofit Community Against Sexual Harm, also known as the acronym CASH, and Sacramento City Council member Eric Guerra, who helped lock down the state funding for this project. This is an unprecedented study that was released, not only in Sacramento County, but in the state of California. I would really love to just start off with the origin story. What prompted a study of this nature?
Well, it comes from just being a neighbor in Sacramento. I mean, I live near Stockton Boulevard, and many of us drive by every day. And Stockton Boulevard, like many commercial corridors in Sacramento County, whether it's, you know, Florin or Watt, Fulton, you know, Franklin, all of these corridors, we have human trafficking, sex trafficking specific, happening in right in front of us, in front of communities. Unfortunately, it's modern day slavery. Terry had showed up to a neighborhood association meeting before I got elected to the city council and started talking about the challenge of so many women that were trapped in this cycle right here in our own community. You don't have to go to another country to see the type of, you know, indentured servitude or like I said, modern day slavery that's occurring. And so when I got on the council, we started talking about how do we support the diversion effort to help the survivors make sure that they don't fall back into that system, because many of them depended on their victimizers or perpetrators to stay afloat and stay alive. Young women, you know, in also some of the illegal massage parlors that were popping up as well, that contributed also to the decay of the commercial corridors. All of those pieces combined, we started, you know, thinking about, okay, I like the support of CASH. I want to make sure that we're making an actual dent in it for our city. And what we found out was this is pervasive throughout the county. When we started discussing this issue with other colleagues throughout the state, the reality was that nowhere in the state did we quite understand what the magnitude was. So I went, we said, we got to think bigger than just funding the programs here locally and figure out what is going to make systemic change. And before you can just start making change and going at it, you know, I think the proverbial, you know, analogy is, you know, you don't want to shoot then aim. We want to aim and then figure out where our target is. And so we needed to find out what the scope of sex trafficking is. And sadly, the victimization that's happened here of many of our youth, to say specifically, was a number that wasn't surprising to us, and even on the conservative side. So reached out. The Department of Justice is the one that's managing the state contract. We were able to secure, you know, over $1 million to be able to study, not just in the city of Sacramento, but in the county of Sacramento, how many people were affected.
Between 2015 and 2020, correct?
Yeah. And I think it's over 13,000 victims of sex trafficking, survivors of sex trafficking in just that short window of time. And we're fortunate enough to have Sacramento State, you know, right here in our own community, home to Capital Public Radio, and to be able to have that expertise to help us crack this nut and solve this problem.
I'm curious what that number represents, more than 13,000 victims and survivors between 2015 and 2020. Dr. Williams, can you help me understand what that number means and what it doesn't mean?
Sure. I think that to understand the number is to we like to put some caveats around it. So it means that that is the number of individuals who were trafficked at any point during that time period in Sacramento County. So it's not people who were exclusively trafficked within the county. It's people who were, but they, we, one of our criteria was that they had to have been trafficked in the county. We can't say that's the total number of people at any one point, but it is the range with our study that we know that at least 13,000 people were trafficked at some point during that time period.
And what Councilmember Guerra just said, that it likely is an undercount. Do you have any idea how much of an undercount? Because more than 13,000 human beings in Sacramento County, for me, just sounds extraordinary in and of itself.
I think that's the issue, is that there isn't a precise number. There is a range. And to understand how that number came about, I like the analogy of you have a pond and you don't know how many fish are in it. And so what we did is we counted basically how many touches across different agencies that individuals showed up. So it's sort of a catch and release where you would catch a fish, you tag it and put it in. So the more times that the fish would come up, you know that you have a smaller group of individuals. But what happened is that we had very little overlap in agencies. And so what we found was really about 11.2 times the amount of people that are actually being served in the county. And so the methodology really is designed to find these hard to count individuals.
So that number, more than 13,000, is 11 times the number previously known by law enforcement and service providers?
Yes. And it's the if you think about who we're touching in terms of our services, for every person, for example, that Cash is helping, there are 11 other individuals out there who are being trafficked.
CASH is the acronym for Community Against Sexual Harm. That is a nonprofit. And Terry, you led that nonprofit. I would imagine these numbers are not surprising to you, but if you can also just explain who these people are.
The number was not surprising to me in that we knew we were just touching the surface. But to go through the study and see the number, and in conjunction with the administrative data, we did interviews. And so then to attach these lives to this data, it was still shocking on some level. It really was. Who the people are. They are our young women. So we interviewed adult women, and the stories that came out were stories of young people. Our safety net for our young people is not strong enough. It is letting way too many people fall through and have very limited choices. So this was a story of young people, some that never escaped fully. So we were talking to older women at this time whose lives have been trapped by this with no viable way out. It is our neighbors, our children. It is an issue. 13,000 people over 5 years is a lot of community members. It really is. And so there are clearly some disproportionate impacts in low opportunity communities, in places with deep poverty. Clearly, we find that there is the intersections there. But we also just find where the safety net has been weak. We have let people fall into these cracks, to vulnerabilities that are very hard to get out of.
I believe some of the victims were as young as 14 years old.
We were interviewing adults, but it was incredibly common for the average age of starting to be somewhere between 15 and 19. It's very, very, very common.
And one of the unfortunate things, it's also many women of color. And one of the things that brought to my attention as a council member was when our police department would go into some of these illicit or illegal massage parlors, many of them were women who had no language access. They didn't have access to a family network or support network. They were living in those locations. And so the approach was also to figure out how do we address that. The study talked about the disproportionality of this, of women of color also as well. But it touches everyone, unfortunately. And the sad part was to find out is it's our own neighbors who are buying people for their pleasure. They're buying folks and perpetuating that modern day slavery.
When reading the study and reading the interviews, the excerpts from those women who were interviewed, I believe there was more than 150. I guess just starting off, is that unprecedented? I mean, a study of this kind is already unprecedented, but actually including interview subjects of this size, more than 150, into a research study, has that been done before when trying to understand the scope of sex trafficking?
We did exclusively women who identified as having the trafficking experience. So that was unique for this study. The other thing that was very, very unique and the first of its kind was that we trained survivor leaders to do the interviews. So the quality of our interviews was very, very high, meaning the conversations that they had, I think, were very strong because of using survivor leaders to do the interviews and the model that we used. So that was a very unique aspect of this study. And that was really exciting for this project because we had many, many women say they've never talked about this. And they did talk in depth to our researchers.
Well, Terry, what goes into gaining that trust and that vulnerability?
I think that using people with lived experience with this issue and with so many of our issues that seem to be very vexing to us, I think that is a really underused strategy. I think that people are just simply more comfortable talking to people who have walked in their shoes in some fashion. When you're looking at issues that have so much stigma, there's so much marginalization around it. That is just a strategy that is successful, and it is fair to people to take the time to train people to meet them and talk to them in a way that's comfortable to them. I think that is the fair way to do this, an appropriate way to do it. And then we've been a longstanding organization in this space. I mean, while we're still a relatively young organization, considering we've been in this space exclusively for all these years. So we also interviewed in a safe space, in a comfortable space where we were also able to offer services and offer basic needs where we did the interview. So it was a very thoughtful process.
Dr. Williams, given that, you know, you're with the Institute for Social Research at Sac State and data is really your wheelhouse, when you were reading these interviews to really add a deeper layer, how did that shape the way you put this research together and how you viewed the data?
Well, I think it was a pretty impactful study for me and my team, reading the interviews and reading these stories. I think one, I came out of it with just a profound level of respect for these women who have really just survived and they've done anything they could to survive. I think also it's a really nuanced issue. And so I think if we would have sent sort of traditional researchers to say, have you been trafficked? I would have said, probably most of them would have said no. But the really unique part of this study was that it was informed by the survivors. And so the questioning was a very subtle and nuanced in the sense of talking about sort of how they got into sex trafficking. And when they start to talk about how they actually were introduced to even sex work, a lot of the women talked about how they were in a relationship and they were tricked. And they were sent to a hotel and said, you're not leaving until you make so much money. And so I think reading over and over these stories, you can see how I think the media does not really do justice of how this happens and how it could happen to really anyone. It could happen to our, you know, anyone's daughter, anyone's sister, or their sons too, because also men are trafficked and transgendered folks. So it's really not something I wish we've had a lot of conversations with the research team. I wish we could take sex out of it because it really is a public health relational type of issue that needs to be addressed that way. And then unfortunately, it does involve, you know, people who are being trafficked for sex work.
We use the word grooming. I mean, it's a gradual process. There's a lot of nuance to it. And I would imagine that's why there really isn't reliable data that exists about sex trafficking, and which probably prompted this undertaking in Sacramento County.
Exactly. And I think, you know, Terry is the expert here in terms of her career working with trafficked folks. But it is something I learned so much from these survivors and listening to their stories, and how domestic violence is just an integral part of what's going on here in relationship violence. And Terry, I'm sure you have more to add to that.
I know we checked in a lot with the research team as they were transcribing and reading the interviews one after the other. And obviously our researchers and the rest of the team, because it was tough stuff. And we're just reading it, you know, and there's just these moments where you sit with this and say, these are people's lives. These are not other people's lives. This is our community. These are people. The thing about this study was there was nowhere to go. This is our community members that we are reading about right here. And I think that was what was really important about this research, is that it doesn't let anybody say, well, we're different because of this or that. We got no wiggle room. These are our community members, our women, our men, our children, and something more needs to be done.
The point of domestic violence, I think, is also an important touch point when it comes to sex trafficking. And it's for that reason that CASH and also organizations like the Sacramento Regional Family Justice Center, WEAVE, City of Refuge, and My Sister's House have all been very supportive of this effort here. Because it is that not just the physical abuse, but the emotional abuse that leads to this breakdown of people being trapped in a cycle that they can't get out of. And this all kind of started in an effort to try to help victims and survivors out of that cycle. And that's how we came to the realization that we've got to get some real information in front of our state lawmakers, so that if we're ever going to make a dent in it, in our own community, we've got to hit those hard touch points of domestic violence and then understand what are going to be the things that help people out of it.
Well, Councilmember Guerra, this published and was released last month. What kind of response have you received since then?
It was very well received from people on the ground and in the community and in the space, because you got to bear in mind when the pandemic hit. That's the other interesting point about when we started this study. It was before the pandemic. And when the pandemic hit, everyone who's involved in domestic violence, human trafficking, knew that the pandemic and the close down and the shutdown and being people locked away was only going to escalate the number of people being victimized. And sure enough, once the study was released, it reminded people and actually energized the community to say, we have to get at this, because we know that during the pandemic, this probably even exacerbated even further.
Finally, how will this research translate to meaningful change and resources and ultimately support for victims and survivors of sex trafficking? I know we're in the early stages. This was just released, you know, a couple weeks ago. But I'm just curious, for all of you, what are your hopes that this translates into? Terry, I'll start with you.
For me, this is a story of prevention. This is a story of, this is a public health issue. We have people who are victimized. We have people who exploit, and we have people who buy exploited people, all in our community. We have to take a different approach, and we really have to care about closing the gaps where people are falling in. We really have to say that it is great. My organization, we are the hardest working group, I think, and we do every single thing we can do, but we cannot prevent this. We are at the other end where things have already happened, and sometimes such terrible things have already happened that is, they're really hard to, women survive, men survive, they come out of this, but wouldn't it be great if that didn't have to be their story, that we could prevent it from the beginning? So that was going into this, that was where I was, and that's where I'm at coming out of this.
Yeah, Terry, I mean, your heart is in nonprofit work. Councilmember Guetta, you're an elected official. How would you like this study translate into meaningful solutions for this issue?
No, clearly, as Terry mentioned, it's the investment in our youth, the investment in mental health support and access for young people to understand what a healthy relationship looks like. I mean, we haven't had an opportunity with many of our young people to be exposed to healthy relationships if they're already in a place where they're facing domestic violence. And we know that that perpetuates. And so then you fall into these cycles. On the land use side, one thing we found out was we could get after the profiteering of people who were using facilities or locations to make money off of it. And how do we go as a city or as a county to go after those profiteers who maybe are turning a blind eye to sex trafficking happening on their property and making a buck out of it. And then one, stop being punitive to the survivors and figure out how to get them out of it. So on the back end, as we are helping people out of this, let's figure out how to get them back on their feet. And a lot of those issues are things that we're facing now. The cost of housing, the fact that many of them don't have any skills or training. So the study will help us inform the gaps in our education, our public policy system, our education system, our housing system, to be able to make some meaningful change. And fortunately, we have a great university like Sac State that's helping a lot of those issues out.
Well, that brings me to you, Dr. Williams. I mean, do you hope that this research serves as a template for more research to be done, not only throughout California, but across the country?
Yes, I would love to see that. And I think as an applied research center, I think that we are going to continue working with CASH and the research team and the advisory council to really sort of solidify how you use people with lived experience as experts, as really the focal point for designing a study and implementing it. So I'm really excited to see how we can take this a little further, maybe even apply it to different populations. And so I see it as just the beginning.
And that is my conversation with Dr. Shannon Williams with the Institute for Social Research at Sacramento State, Terry Galvan with the nonprofit Community Against Sexual Harm, also known by the acronym CASH, and Sacramento City Council member Eric Guetta, discussing a new study into the scope of sex trafficking in Sacramento County. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.